Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. I'm here today with a longtime friend of mine, Jennifer Miller, and she is the CEO of the Westmoreland Food Bank. Jen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always nice to talk to you.
Well, you know, I like to talk to you in that back to school time because I think about how much work goes in to the summer months feeding kids, and then sort of changing gears to how you're going to help students once they get back to school. So let's start with those summer months. Tell us about sort of the strategy change and what happens over the summer with the food bank to try to get, kids that would normally sort of eat, I don't know, maybe 2-3 meals at school, and then not having that provided for them anymore. Can you talk to us for a few minutes about that?
Sure. You know, it's a constant challenge. We do run the summer food service program. Fortunately, it was not very successful this year. Part of the reason was it was during pandemic. It was permitted to be grab and go. So the kids could just go to the sites and grab their lunches and take them home. Now they have come back to congregate feeding, which means, for those who don't know, that they are gathering at a community room, a library, park, to be able to have their lunches. Unfortunately, in this day and age, you know, things have changed and parents aren't completely comfortable with allowing their children to go on site to eat. So we have started to talk with, you know, the powers that be to see if we could get that changed back to grab and go. And we're hoping for much success. Last year, we served an all-time high of over 49,000 meals. This year, we're going to be lucky if we hit 20,000. So that is a huge drop off. You know, if we're feeding one kid, we fed one kid, and that is fantastic. That's one child that did not have to go without. But when you think about how many meals we served last year compared to what we're serving this year for that program, it's very disheartening. And, you know, for as much as we wanted to be able to supply even more compared to even last year, it just wasn't in the cards. Kids are different now. You know, they are attached to their screens, even though it's not popular for our parents and people like us, to be in front of their phones or their tablets or their TV. It's still a reality that's what they want to do. And sometimes parents just aren't okay with them going someplace without them. So, we're looking at how we can revise that for next year and make it even better. But, you know, we do get state funding for that, federal funding for that, and we can't do it on our own.
Back up and help me understand this. So you're saying that the funding amount didn't change or the fundraising piece didn't change.
Did not.
It was the number of people who came forward and said, I need this meal in person.
Exactly. Because they don't want to sit down with strangers or with other kids to eat. They want to take it home. And I feel like if they don't want to sit down and eat, we shouldn't have to make them do that. But unfortunately, our funding makes us do that. So that makes it very difficult. The Summer Food Service Program, we have operated since we opened our doors 41 years ago. And this is probably one of the worst years we have ever had with getting kids to come and eat. So it makes it very sad. It makes me very concerned when we go from such a large number in 2022 to such a low number. And 20,000 meals is still 20,000 meals. That's a lot. But compared to what we did last year, it's really quite drastic.
So it was about less than half really what was served.
Exactly.
And so you tried to investigate and get to the root of this and say, you know, is it our marketing? Is it our publicity? Do people not know about it?
Absolutely.
And clearly that's not the case because if 40,000, came the year before, then you know it's not that. So you feel like this is a sort of a function of socialization almost, right? Like I don't want to socialize. I just want to take it home.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's one of those things we would love for them to be socializing and we would love for them to be outside playing. That's just not what kids do anymore. So it's very difficult. And, we're trying to bend the rails a little bit, if you will, to try to see if we can get this to work some other way. Because we know that there's a need out there. Just looking at the free and reduced lunch rates all over Westmoreland County. It's quite phenomenal. So, you know, we know the need is out there. The fact is they, you know, they're out of school. They don't want to sit in a room, you know, 5 days a week to eat. They want to be at home, or they want to be where they're comfortable.
And who knows if transportation is an issue too, with gas prices and, you know, maybe working parents, things like that.
All of the above, Jen, all of the above. It's just, there's so much, times are changing. You know, we all know that, you know, our world is so different, and, you know, we have to try to be able to you know, bend with that.
Yeah, for sure. And so now you switch gears because it's back to school time, and now the whole process changes. So why don't you tell people about what happens in the fall?
Well, what happens in the fall is we go from summer food service right back to backpack. We have the weekend backpack program at 19 of our schools in Westmoreland County. And that supplies two breakfasts, two lunches, and two snacks for the weekends. The children who participate must receive permission from their parents to do so for allergy reasons, and basic, you know, parents need to give permission. And they are able to do that as long as they are receiving free or reduced lunch, or qualify for free and reduced lunch at their schools. And the schools, of course, need to participate. The biggest caveat to all of this is, you know, there's not a steady funding stream for the summer food service program. We rely strictly on grants and the generosity of the community to pay for this program. So it does cost us around $6 per child per week. So it's per backpack. You know, so it does get to be a little bit of a pricey program, but it's worth it because we have seen so many success stories from not just individual children, but overall test scores on Mondays and Tuesdays when they come back from a weekend of actually having food to eat instead of maybe only having one meal over the weekend compared to having two or sometimes three meals, you know, it's during the school week. So the program has seen so many successful stories, and we're very proud to be able to continue this programming.
So when you partner with these schools, they help locate the students who are in need of this, and then you reach out to the parents, you get them to opt in for this. So tell us about the actual packing of these. Who does that, and how does that work?
Well, we actually work with different corporations. We have worked with Project Preserve. We've worked with McLean Foods, and they actually have a backpack because this is a nationwide program. So we're actually able to order from different menus and have that brought directly into us. And then it's sent out then to the schools. Excuse me, I apologize. We send it out directly to the schools, and then they give it to the children. And most likely they're not going in backpacks. They're probably going in thank you bags, just because of stigma. But if they want them in their own backpacks, they can put them in there.
Mm. It's just amazing how, you know, that all works and sort of fans out throughout the community. So if you are you said you also partner with companies and corporations, probably for donations and volunteers as well to help execute this program. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Or we want to expand the program. We have a waiting list of schools that want to get on the program. It is much more cost effective the way that we do this because of, you know, just our buying power. If we went out and bought each individual component that goes into the backpack, it would be a lot more than $6 per child per backpack. So that's why we do it that way. So the monetary donations are the most important thing when it comes to the backpack program, because, you know, we're not able to sustain it without a funding stream. Mm-hmm. So that community support is priceless to us. So the more people that donate directly towards the backpack program, the more children we're able to help.
Mm, that's amazing. I'm sure you get a lot of your regulars, right? You have a lot of your regulars, but how do you reach new potential donors?
We try to do as much PR as possible. We try to do a lot of social media. We try to put a lot on our website and our e-newsletters. Word of mouth is amazing. You know, we do a lot of marketing in general with food banking for all of our programs. And, you know, we do try to inform people of our specialty programs, such as the backpack program and summer food service, so that people are aware that it is out there. And we encourage, you know, parents that have students that are in the elementary schools and the junior highs and senior highs as well, that if that's something that they are in need of and they know that there's more than just their own child that could use this, we encourage them to talk with their administration and see how they could get involved with the program as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's a big, it's a heavy list. I mean, lift, you're always having to fundraise, right? I mean, it never stops. There's no time of year where you aren't looking for donations and looking for people to help.
Yes. Yes. What the best part is, you know, that, you know, when we talk about looking for people to help, it is nonstop, but when we look at what our fundraising looked like 23 years ago compared to now, you know, in the year 2000, fundraising was only 10% of our budget. It's now well over 60% of our budget.
Is that a grant issue? That's a state funding issue?
It's a little bit of everything. So, you know, with grant funding and with state and federal support and so on and so forth, it reduces down because of the cost per doing business, you know, basically. We're still, you know, we're still at 96% of everything brought in goes back out to the community. So our administrative funds are very, very, very low. You know, so we really have to rely on the generosity of the community and look for new and different funding sources to be able to assist us in our endeavors, especially with the programs that don't have steady funding streams. And when I say steady funding streams, I mean like our normal food pantry distribution program has the state food purchase program and has the emergency food assistance program, you know, with the USDA commodities and so on and so forth. Some of these specialty programs don't have that type of funding. There's always somebody just trying to get, you know, the backpack program funded through the state budget, but that is a very heavy lift because there are so many, many priorities across our state budget. So that makes it very difficult.
Oh yeah. I mean, you're constantly fighting for that for sure. So what changes have you seen since COVID beyond the in-person dining and having to, you know, rethink that? Have you also seen more donors, fewer donors, more volunteers, fewer, you know, how did COVID impact what you do?
Since 2020, Jen, it's been like a roller coaster. In 2020, we hit a peak of ever in fundraising. We definitely felt the love, for lack of a better word. We felt the support in what we were doing and with our emergency services. We also felt the impact of people not necessarily getting laid off, but maybe being furloughed or have lost their jobs. And then trying to get back into the workforce has been a struggle. The price of food skyrocketing, the price of gas skyrocketing. Now with the emergency allotments through the SNAP, which is the food stamp program, ending back in March, we've seen a plethora of people who are now coming to us going, I can't make it on what I'm getting in food stamps now. People who have gotten jobs that were on public assistance and now are working are still not able to make ends meet for their families. So they're considered the working poor. We're seeing people asking for food more than once a month. You know, normally we are just a supplement to their food stamps and to their regular income. People are looking at us more than anything to help fill their pantries. And, you know, we're giving a 7 to 10 day supply of food, if not more, every single month. And, you know, there's only so far that the dollars will stretch. Now we're hearing that the moratorium on evictions has now stopped since the pandemic, and we're getting hit with calls like crazy because people aren't able to afford their rent and their utilities and their food. And there's a myriad of reasons. And I can honestly tell you that the majority of the people that we're seeing that are new are the working poor. They were promised very, very high wages during the pandemic to come and work. And then once things settled down, their wages went down to what they were normally asking for. And most of that is not a wage to be able to raise a family. So there's some really very tough stories out there. And, you know, another thing too is emergencies. And when we say emergencies, we're talking about people that have never had to get into the food pantry system before that are calling us to find out how they can get a box every single month and so on. We used to do maybe one or two emergencies a week. We're seeing 3 to 4 emergencies a day. And that is quite phenomenal. And they are getting attached to a food pantry after they see us because we're able to track that and, you know, wanting to make sure that they're getting what they need. So it's quite phenomenal what we're seeing now. And I've been doing this for a while, you know, almost 20, what is it, 26, 27 years in food banking. And this is the worst I've ever seen it. And, you know, the fact that the need keeps going up, but the money keeps going down is a very hard pill to swallow sometimes.
Jennifer Miller is the CEO of the Westmoreland Food Bank. After the break, we're going to talk about Hunger Action Month coming up in September. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Classic Hits 107.1. Listen live at WHJBFM.com.
Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy, here today with Jennifer Miller, the CEO of the Westmoreland Food Bank, talking to us about the state of hunger in Westmoreland County. Pretty dire circumstances, considering that now more than 60% of your budget is comprised of fundraising, but yet the need, especially for emergency food boxes, is at its highest level ever. So this is a critical show today for anyone listening who's considering making a donation, particularly as we're leading into September, which is Hunger Action Month. So, Jen, you know, we understand there's an awareness component to what you do as well. And so what happens in September?
Well, September is a time for, you know, it's time for action. It's not a time to celebrate. It's a time to commemorate. It's a time to let people know what we do. It's a time for people to get engaged, whether it be monetarily, whether it be volunteering. Volunteers are a huge component of what we do, and we would not be able to do what we do without volunteers. Last year, we had nearly 5,000 volunteers, if not more, give nearly 100,000 hours of time. That's about I think it's like 32 full-time staff equivalent. Mm-hmm. We could not hire 32 more staff. We would never be able to afford that. Mm-hmm. So we are so grateful to our volunteers. But, you know, the volunteer base, even though they are resilient, they are getting older. Mm-hmm. And we're not seeing a lot of our younger volunteers coming, you know, so Hunger Action Month really is a time for people to engage. We're doing some specialty things during Hunger Action Month, which includes a week of service. So stay tuned for that. Check out our website. Check out our Facebook page, you know, to get really involved. There's so many different ways. And, you know, volunteering is really one of the biggest components of what we need right now, other than funds. You know, we're hearing from our pantry coordinators that, you know, they have a lot of volunteers that aren't coming back. A lot of corporations that were allowing their staff to come at, are not able to do that anymore. There is such gratification to allowing your staff to go and work a monthly food distribution, and it might only be 2 or 3 hours, mm-hmm. a whole month, to be able to allow your staff time to be able to go load a car or go pack a box or whatever the case might be. It is quite amazing what you get back from giving, whether it be money or whether it be your time. And Hunger Action Month really shines a light on what we do. We will be having our open house so that everybody who's listening is welcome to come on September 28th from 4 to 8 p.m. and they can tour the food bank. We're going to have food. We're going to have music. We're going to have information about what we do, a chance to ask questions, a chance to sign up to be a volunteer. So we're really looking forward to inviting the community in to see where ending hunger begins. And that's what Hunger Action Month is all about. And it is trying to engage people in the way that works for them. So that could be a food drive. It could be a monetary drive. And again, just giving of your time. It's a start, not an end.
You say, what would you say the age, the predominant age of people who are seeking your help are, or is it across the board?
It's really across the board. We have a senior food box program that we are, we have a caseload that is assigned to us. And it is 1,500 that we're able to serve. And we're on a waiting list of, it's more. I don't want to quote on the amount because it just left my brain. But we have a waiting list for that. So I think the predominant age is an adult, which we term as from 18 to 49, in that age group area. And so I think that that's the predominantly highest amount, but we know that there are senior citizens out there that are 60 years of age or older that could benefit by our senior food box program. And we want to be able to get them on to the waiting list. Unfortunately, the waiting list goes quickly for obvious reasons. So we want to be able to get people signed up for that program as well. So there is programs to help people with their nutrition from the day they are born until the day they are not anymore. So, it's really a wonderful service to the community that we're able to provide.
Jen, there's a term that you've used over the last few years that probably deserves more investigating, and that's food insecurity, right? Yeah. And why don't you tell people at home what food insecurity means?
Food insecurity means not knowing where your next meal is coming from. It's not necessarily that you have no food in your house or that you have the physical being of being hungry. Physical being of being hungry is your belly growling, your headache, you're lethargic, you're tired. This is not knowing where your next meal is coming from. This is opening the cupboards and seeing that there's very little in there to make a meal. And there are more people like that than what we know. There are more people out there that don't really realize that they're food insecure and they just feel that they're living from paycheck to paycheck, just like everybody else. But they're food insecure because they can't, what they have available to them is not able to make a meal, and they don't have the funds to be able to go to the grocery store to add to what they already have. So food insecurity is very, very vast. It can encapsulate so many different circumstances, but that's the long and short of it.
And there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people in our community that do have that food insecurity, don't even come forward and say, I need some help with this. And so,
you're right. But contrary to popular belief, people don't wish to stand out in a line along the street or in an alley or someplace where they're visible. People still have a lot of pride, and to actually have to ask for a hand up when you've never had to do that before is a very humbling experience. I had an interviewer ask me one time, why are they standing out on the street? I said, well, where do you want them to stand? And he said, I don't know if I could do that. And I said, if your family is hungry, you'll do that. You'll do what you need to do. And, it's sometimes when you encounter people who are in need of a hand up, they may not always seem as grateful as you would like to think that they are, but they are grateful. They are embarrassed. They don't want to be there. It's a very difficult thing to have to tell your child that they can't have something at the store. When you know that their friends or their families are able to do that, going to the food bank going to a food pantry has restored some dignity, for children to not have to worry. Children should never know they're poor, right? Mm-hmm. They should never have to know that. They should never have to grow up and say, we didn't have, mm-hmm. but the think if we get people to come to us and say, if it wasn't for a food bank wherever I grew up, I wouldn't have eaten in my lifetime and in my childhood. And, you know, that's a hard thing to think about, your parents struggling to put food on your table. You know, no kid should ever have to know that they're poor. It's just a sad thing.
Tell us about all the ways that people can find out more or connect with the food bank in terms of websites, social, phone calls, you know, give us all that information.
Absolutely. Our website is westmorelandfoodbank.org. That's westmorelandfoodbank.org. You could pretty much find out anything you want there. There is an ability to be able to contact us there. So it will get a email directly if you aren't able to call for whatever reason. It's also mobile friendly. So if all that you have is your mobile phone to be able to check on that, it'll be easy for you. We are on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram and TikTok. We are having a little bit of fun with TikTok, trying to get people to understand that, you know, we need to have a little bit of fun and laugh a little bit sometimes too, because what we do is very heady and it's very intense. But it also gets the word out about special things like Dairy Month and Hunger Action Month and all those other things. And of course, by phone at 724-468-8660. Again, that's 724-468-8660. And we can answer any questions that you have. We can get you set up at a food pantry. We can get you set up with the Senior Food Box program and so much more. We're also even able to do SNAP application assistance. So for people who are eligible for food stamps, they can call the food bank and we can actually walk them through the beginning stages of getting that benefit.
Jen, and you're looking for donations, volunteers, and also to assist people. So one of the things I like about your website is that, you know, the first button is we will help you, you know, let us know what help you need. And then the second priority is volunteer, you know, we need people. And then the third priority is donate. And so I'm hoping that, you know, all three of those things become, you know, even more relevant and noticed and publicized in September for Hunger Action Month. I think that's going to be really important that people get there. So that date again is September 28th, I believe, right?
September 28th from 4 to 8. And we actually found out that Arthur Motes, a former Pittsburgh Steeler, or one of our legends, is actually going to be coming to speak and do some autograph signing and things like that. So everybody is welcome. It is an open house and we want people to come in and see what we do and understand that, you know, we're the bank and all of our food pantries are the ATMs. And that's where people go to make a withdrawal. And that's where ending hunger begins. And we really want to be able to showcase what we do, our volunteers, our agencies, and all of the people that make this a well-oiled machine.
Jennifer Miller is the CEO of the Westmoreland Food Bank. Again, she mentioned September 28th as an opportunity to go to the food bank near Delmont, take a tour, understand what they do and how you can help, or also connect you with a resource that you and your family may need. Jen, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you. It's always a joy to talk with you.
If you have an idea for a guest on Westmoreland Community Connections, please contact WHJB. We'd love to hear from you. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. As always, I thank you so much for listening, and I encourage you to connect with the Westmoreland Food Bank today. This is Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB.